In this series, lowimpact.org and the Open Credit Network talks with people working to build a mutually owned, democratic, decentralized economy that builds community and doesn't destroy nature. We want to increase collaboration to bring about system change. Find links to the sites mentioned in the videos in the description below. Join the conversation by liking, commenting, and subscribing to our channel.
So I'll try to ask this question again. It's not specifically about mutual credit, but we would like to talk to local groups about the possibility of becoming involved with mutual credit. The question really is about how best to get the attention of local groups, or is it better to go through the transition network and to do it that way? We just like to bring mutual credit to the attention of more people, really.
Probably the best thing is to go to the national hubs or the regional hubs and see what they think is the best way. You might want to organize a talk or a training or something to engage people. That might be quite effective. Write a blog post, put it up on Transition Network website, get somebody there to interview you, all those sorts of things. But again, it's one of those questions and one of those things that that we've often been asked is like, oh, I've got this great idea and transition groups would really love it and really benefit from it. Could you put us in touch with all the transition groups in the UK or all the transition groups of France? And then we say, well, actually, we can't. It's not because we don't want to. It's just that we don't have the mechanisms to do that because, again, we're not a membership organization. We don't ask people to keep up their contact information necessarily. I mean, they're supposed to, but they don't always do that. And, you can just go onto our website, which holds the same information that we have about who's doing transition. So again, it's that kind of thing about a membership top-down sort of way of working as opposed to a self-organizing way of working.
Yeah. We're soon going to have a package to offer to local groups, which they'll get a website and a directory and a trading engine and a membership agreement and everything they need, really, white-labeled so they can put their own logos on it to have a sort of local mutual credit trading scheme, which can intertrade with other groups in the country. We're not quite there yet, but yeah, it'd be very interesting to talk to the Transition Network about that. Mm. So I think that the gender balance is pretty good in transition. Is it that there might even be more women than men, but I know that it's not balanced in terms of either class or ethnicity. What do you think might be done about that?
Well, let's take class first. I think there is an issue around class, and I don't think we were that good at speaking to across class divisions. And I made the kind of, in one of my last blog posts, I made the kind of bold and somewhat controversial assertion that really transition was talking to middle-class people in a sort of very unconscious way, that sort of dog whistle politics, if you will. And the dog whistle was something like, well, if you're really good and if you're really good at reducing your energy use, then there's a chance that you might be able to retain some of the privilege, some of the I don't know, comfort that the sort of lifestyle that you've been used to is it can be afforded. And but for people in working class, who are working more working class or identify more as working class, that sort of message wouldn't work. And I don't think there is that much in the transition movement that spoke to working class people. And part of it was rhetoric. Part of it was how we talk about it. Part of it was just the sort of things we did. So that's a tough one. And
yeah.
And some groups, I think, were pretty good at it. Most groups weren't. Ethnicity, again, I think there was, that was really difficult. And again, I don't have any magic wand. I don't know of anybody who's, I'm sure there's people who are doing great things in building diverse movements, but, again, you'd have to speak to them to hear how they do it.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar, but I thought it might have been a bit controversial. So I'm glad you've thought about this yourself. I get the feeling that the middle classes have got a bit too much to lose. They don't want really big systemic wholesale change, whereas the working classes don't have as much to lose. And also I think the changes need to be economic to attract the working class. I think there's a lot of working class people I speak to, because I'm from a working class town and I go back regularly, and there are not many people who I can honestly say enjoy their work. It's just something to do to get a wage, and they are often bullied because they're not very high up the hierarchy, and they don't have any sort of, you know, they don't find the work meaningful. It's just a means to pay the rent and but I think there are some things happening. I mean, the Preston model is very interesting. That's a very working class town, and the things they're doing there are very, very economic, and they, you know, help to change people's working routine and working situation. I noticed the map. I looked at the map of transition and initiatives, the little flags. And where I'm from in the West Midlands, there were little flags in Shropshire and around the outside of the West Midlands. And then you had the whole of the 3.5 million people in the West Midlands. There was no flags at all. There was nothing happening there at all. And I think it needs to have a slightly different, this goes for XR as well. I think there needs to be a slightly different message to attract the working class. And
I've been talking to, some Labour Party activists up in Cumbria who are very, very working class, kind of ex-Glasgow dockers and people like that. And, how do we get involved in the climate emergency? I said, well, is there a local XR group? And they go, yeah, but, you know, just the way they do things and the way they speak about it, it just doesn't speak to us.
Yeah.
We don't feel like we belong there. And that, you know, I don't know how you bridge that divide, because the sorts of things that they were talking about, you know, like, you know, standing up and, you know, holding hands and feeling the energy of the group, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, for myself and most people I'm involved with, that's like, oh yeah, of course we'd do that in a meeting, you know, but for a lot of people, that's like, oh, what is this? You
know, yeah, I remember seeing
some sort of strange cult or something, you know?
Yeah, I remember seeing a YouTube video of the XR demonstrations, and they were holding up the traffic. And this one guy said, I'll go and talk to the lorry drivers and explain what's happening. And, you know, it will be okay. And I thought, mate, it's not going to be okay. And sure enough, it wasn't okay. there was a complete communication breakdown, and they weren't speaking the same language at all, really. But with XR, I mean, I don't know what you think. It seems like a sort of along the same lines as transition, but with more urgency, sort of more about ecological collapse and less about peak oil.
I think XR has gotten, I mean, I'm involved in my local XR group, as are a lot of people who have been involved in transition, and I think XR has got a lot of things right, and has benefited from.
Yeah, I think they're a bit like tougher. I think they're a bit tougher. I'm not sure, but they seem more willing to give up privilege, like flying, for example, or avoiding arrest. Yeah. I don't know if that's fair, but they do seem more inclined to give up privileges.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the culture of XR. That's true.
So what kind of things were founded via transition? What kind of economic change? I mean, I interviewed Jay Tomt, about Reconomy, and I've forgotten the name of it now. The sort of local economy, Dragon's Den type events.
Yeah.
What was that called? The local economic something, where they were helping to launch little.
Yeah, the local economic forum. Yeah.
Local economic forum. Yeah, which was great.
Yeah.
Anything else that any sort of intentional communities or co-ops or non-corporate economic institutions?
I don't. That's a really good question. I don't know of any places that I'd say, well, that was started because of transition, except for local projects and local things that people have done, of which there's many. I think transition groups did a really good job of grabbing hold of and repurposing things that other groups like Permaculture or Global Ecovillage Network or some of the other, you know, environmental groups have done and using that and taking those ways of working on board. There's nothing that I can really point to and say, well, yeah, that was done. I mean, there's been some really interesting ways of working that has evolved out of transition, particularly on the continent. You know, when I think about the places like Liège in Belgium, or some of the towns in France that have been great at working with local government and creating this bridge between local government and transition. And there's this whole project that's going on at the moment about municipalities in transition, and again, how you make that bridge between the municipal government and its citizens. Because one of the things that I think transition has been its strength is mobilizing and getting local people on board and finding ways that can talk that language at the same time as a lot of local government is very poor at, you know, they're much more of a top down and speaking at people rather than getting them on board. So it feels like a natural synergy. And in fact, that's what's happening in several places across Europe.
Do you think the transition narrative was right? And what would you have changed in hindsight?
I struggle with right and wrong. I don't think there's any such thing. I think there's stuff that is very that works and works better or doesn't work or works less well. And when I look back on transition, I say, well, yeah, we are going to have to live more locally. We're going to have to be more self-reliant. We're going to need to know how our neighbors and need to know how to work with them. Building local resilience is got to be a great thing. Revitalized local economies has got to be the way forward. As the sort of high energy, high resource use, globalized system breaks down, well, yeah, that's what we're going to need. I have a big question mark about the role of technology and to what extent, because I think most transition groups say, well, you know, any sort of high-end technology, any sort of advanced technology is just going to crash and burn. And so there's not really any place for it. Whereas I question that. In what time scale and how soon or how long the time scale that might be, I don't know. But I just know that certainly in the building industry, there's some really, really interesting high-tech developments in how buildings are being built. and maintained. I also think we're seeing some really interesting developments in agriculture. I had my first plant burger the other day. I've been trying to get hold of one for about a year and a half. I was in London and I had a plant burger and it was fantastic. It was absolutely delicious. And I think there's going to be
What kind of a burger was it? Say again. What kind of a burger was it?
Plant-based, plant burger. You know, so no animal products. All plant-based.
A veggie burger.
Yeah, effectively a veggie burger, but not as the kind of as the veggie burger you might get in your old style health food shop. I mean, this was a sort of it was the chain was called Honest Burger, and there's a sort of new style burger that. If you didn't know it was plant-based, you would think you were eating meat, which is kind of interesting. But I think there's going to be a revolution in how we produce food over the next 10 or 15 years that George Monbiot is talking about. And it's going to rely on technology. And I don't think that technology is just going to go away. I think I'm just interested in how that, you know, it's like who owns that technology, who has access to it, and whether that's going to create even more social inequality, or can it be rolled out in a way that's more egalitarian and create a better world for everyone.
I guess my approach is to find out what works in local communities and to replicate it and to sort of grow and federate. To network it to scale, and I think that would be very, very difficult without the internet. So,
I mean, that's what that is what kind of microbe-based agriculture is talking about. That they're going to have a fermentation farm in every community, and they're going to produce a whole range of different products, and they're going to all be networked together. But it's all going to be very local-based production.
Yeah, I guess it's how do you stop the big food producers from taking it over or cornering the market. That's the difficult thing, isn't it?
I've talked
with people in my local transition group in London, and it doesn't seem to be much understood especially with the people I've spoken to. I haven't spoken to everybody, obviously, but it doesn't seem to be much of an understanding of extraction, which I found a bit disappointing. And in one of your blog articles, you say that whatever kind of business activity there is, there's always the capitalist growth imperative sitting on top of it. But if the growth imperative is because of a demand for constantly increasing returns by shareholders and from the extra economic activity required to cover interest payments to banks, then
how do we build the alternative that doesn't need to extract wealth from your community and doesn't need to constantly repay interest?
Yeah, well, that's one of those big questions that I don't know if transition groups can answer that.
What I was saying though is that I found it difficult to even ask that question in my local transition group. It wasn't on the agenda. Sometimes corporates will put solar panels on their roof and say, "Look at us, we're ethical. You can give us your money now."
Yeah. At this trade show, me and my partner were going around it, and we had a new term, which was eco bling. So, you know, it's like, is your product eco bling free? Because that's the obvious thing for marketing people to do, is just to put a bit of eco bling on something and start selling it as eco. And it's, but there we are.
Just finally, I read it was a long time ago now, but I read the Rocky Road critique. I believe it was Paul Chatterton.
I've
also interviewed for this series. And they said we should name and confront capitalism as the problem. And they said that transition seemed afraid to do that because they're too nice. And I'm not sure about that, but... I'm not sure about that argument, though. I know what he means, and I feel as though I'm on that side, but I think it will just end up in arguments. I'm sure that the first capitalists didn't waste time talking about how to bring down feudalism. They just built something different that worked. And I think that's what.
Well, that was always our attitude. Is we're not really interested in naming and shaming and calling out. We're much more interested in creating an alternative.
Yes.
And if it works, then people will come along. And one of the ways in which people have framed transition's theory of change is that we ignore capitalism to death. But I think for various reasons, we've been unable to do that so far.
Mm.
But that's an interesting strategy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might be turned off by that approach because a lot of people only see two alternatives. It's either capitalism or you're a Stalinist.
Yeah.
Hang on a bit. there are other alternatives.
There are alternatives, yeah. Mm. I mean, I think opening up a much more nuanced space in terms of, you know, what are the alternatives? And I think that's happening. I think for a lot of young people that is happening because, you know, it's clear that capitalism is going to take us, I think, where we need to go. But what is and what might that look like? I think
that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say? I think we could. Is there anything you'd like to finish with?
I'm a great believer in taking from and using what's come before and the people who've come before and repurposing and reusing if it's useful, and if not, then composting it and taking from that. And I feel in that position, and we talked about that many times in transition, that was transition going to take us to where we needed to go? Probably not. But as we stood on the shoulders of those who've come before us, so we hope that there'll be others who come beyond us, behind us, who will stand on our shoulders and take us to where we need to go. So,
yep. Yeah. I hope so too. Mm. Naresh, it's been really, really nice talking with you.
Yeah, Dave, it's been great. Thank you.